Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Terror at a train station as it appears Russia bombed yet another group of Ukrainian civilians. I'm Kelly Evans, in for Shepard Smith. This is the news on CNBC.
Russia strikes a crowded train station.
You can see what's left of the missile here now.
Dozens of evacuees killed.
This is an attack on civilians.
Reporting from the ground, plus the much-needed weapon Ukraine is now getting. Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson.
We've made it, all of us.
Her historic path to the high court.
It took just one generation to go from segregation to the Supreme Court of the United States.
No convictions, the major blow to the government's case, and the alleged plot to kidnap the governor of Michigan.
Godspeed, Axiom One.
Historic launch. Tourists headed to the International Space Station for the first time inside the revolutionary mission. The Academy announces its punishment for Will Smith. The prediction for this year's hurricane season, how bad will it be? And the race begins to build a casino in New York City.
Live from CNBC, the facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith.
Good evening. Russia horrifying the world yet again with another shocking atrocity in Ukraine. A Russian missile strike on a train station in Kramatorsk, killing at least 52 innocent people, including children, who were trying to evacuate. That's according to Ukrainian officials. A warning now, the video we're about to show of the aftermath is graphic and disturbing. Ukraine's foreign minister says this was deliberate slaughter, and the Russians knew the train station was full of civilians. The train station is a major evacuation hub in eastern Ukraine. It's where thousands of civilians have been trying to flee the war. The Pentagon reports this was a short-range ballistic missile. The missile had a message painted on it in Russian. It reads, "For the children." Here you can see a toy horse soaked in blood, lying on the ground in the middle of the carnage. Ukrainian officials say five children were among the dead. This is video outside the train station just one day before the attack. You can see how packed and crowded it was near the same area where the missile struck. We begin tonight's coverage with NBC's Ali Aruzi, reporting live in the city of Lviv in western Ukraine. Ali, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has a new video out responding to the attack.
Good evening, Kelly. That's right. And in his video message, he says, like the massacres in Bucha, like many of the atrocities the Russians have committed across this country, the attack on the train station in Kramatorsk has to be dealt with in a tribunal in a long list of war crimes committed by the Russians. Not only the very top of the leadership has to be held to account, but the commanders on the ground down to the person who fired the missile. And Kelly, it was a brutal attack on civilians running away from their homes because the Ukrainian authorities had told them to get out of the Donbass area before they get encircled by the Russians, like they've done in places like Mariupol, before it's too late for them. But clearly, Vladimir Putin did not want them to get out of that area. And it was a scene of carnage at the train station. 50 people dead, at least five children killed. Many people lost arms and legs after the Russians fired two missiles on that railway station with munitions that exploded in the air and spread over a very wide area, causing as much damage as possible to civilians, to children, and to vehicles in that area. But of course, the Russians have denied having anything to do with it, as they have denied having anything to do with the massacres in Bucha. And in Bucha, it was a day of deep sorrow once again. More war crimes coming to light, more mass graves being found. The European Commissioner was visiting Bucha today. She was visibly shocked by what she saw at those mass graves, lighting a candle at one of those locations. And then she met with President Zelensky later, and she promised President Zelensky that they are going to try and fast track their membership to the European Union because of this war, because of the crimes committed by Russia in Ukraine over the last 6 weeks. And that's exactly what Vladimir Putin didn't want to happen. He didn't want Ukraine to join the European Union, but his plans seem to have backfired on him.
Yeah, Ali, thank you very, very much tonight. Now, if you believe the polls in Russia, Vladimir Putin's approval rating is soaring despite his disastrous invasion of Ukraine. Of course, the Kremlin is hiding the truth from the Russian people and feeding them absurd propaganda about the war. NBC's Keir Simmons spoke with a pollster in Moscow to see if support for Putin is genuine.
According to polling, opinions here in Russia have hardened in support of President Putin and what he is doing in Ukraine. Many Russians, like those visiting Red Square today, particularly the older generation, say they agree with what Russia calls its special military operation.
A disconnect between President Putin's image inside and outside Russia. Every day, Russian state television accuses the West of fake news over Ukraine. We traveled to the town of Krasnogorsk, where Russian television is beamed into homes built before the Second World War. Everyone we spoke to supports Russia's role in Europe's latest conflict.
You support President Putin?
Yes, of course we support the president's decision, she says. Another shows us the local newspaper. It says the operation in Ukraine is under control, he tells us. Denis Volkov runs an independent polling company. He says they've seen a 20% increase in President Putin's approval rating from November to March. It's now above 80%.
So in November, President Putin's approval rating is 63, and then...
Then 69, then 71...
And then it jumps.
It jumps to 83.
83%.
Over the same months, Russians' negative view of America has soared from 42% to 72%.
This conflict is hardening attitudes here.
Yes.
Strengthening patriotism.
Conflict with the West, yeah. Negative feelings towards the West.
All being strengthened.
All being strengthened.
51% of Russians say they are proud of their country, while 31% say they feel anxiety, fear, and even horror. We asked the spokeswoman for Russia's foreign ministry whether the apparent support in Russia can be sustained.
Will the amount of bloodshed in Ukraine ultimately impact Russian public opinion?
The world is deceived, she says. In our country, people have alternative sources of information, though there may be questions over whether Russians feel they can answer pollsters honestly.
President Putin himself continues to appear on Russian television, meeting with ministers and his security council. Everyone here knows he is the ultimate decision maker, and they are waiting to hear from him what Russia will do next in Ukraine. Back to you.
Keir, thanks. Ukraine is getting a desperately needed air defense system from a NATO country. Slovakia is donating its Soviet-era S-300 system to the Ukrainians. In the meantime, the United States is deploying a Patriot missile defense system in Slovakia. Slovakia's prime minister says the S-300 system will potentially save a lot of civilians and enable the Ukrainians to shoot down more advanced aircraft and missiles. Let's bring in retired U.S. Army Brigadier General Steve Anderson. Steve, thanks. Can this S-300 system protect Ukraine from attacks like the train station missile strike?
Yeah, Kelly, thanks for having me tonight. And yes, it definitely can help in that regard. You know, they have the capability to provide air cover at high altitude, and this could potentially help. But I would submit to you that I'd rather like to see systems maybe more advanced, like the U.S. Army's Patriot systems, that could be even more effective in interdicting such threats. But and it's no surprise that they're making these kind of attacks. They want to terrorize the people, and it's not going to work. It's just going to enrage them. And, of course, they want to go after logistics hubs like this rail station. And they're frustrated because they're losing the logistics war. And so that's why they're making these kind of attacks. But yes, the S-300 would definitely be a step in the right direction.
Why not the Patriot systems that you mentioned would be superior?
Well, right now we haven't approved bringing the Patriots into the Ukraine. And I think that would be something we could look at in the future. Patriot systems are superior, I believe. as much technology as we can get. I mean, the reason that the Ukrainians are doing so well, we can't forget, is three things. The will of the people, it has not wavered. Number two, they're winning the logistics war, like I just mentioned. And number three, technology. They've been able to leverage technology, the javelins, the Stinger missiles, the incredible drones that they've been using to great capability. So they need to continue to flood the zone, so to speak, with technology like the S-300 and with other systems that U.S. and NATO can provide them. And we can't forget that 15 years ago, the United States was spending $300 million a day on the war in Iraq. We spent $2.4 billion thus far in Ukraine. That's equivalent to 8 days in Iraq. I mean, and this is an existential threat to our nation, and Iraq wasn't. So I submit to you, we need to step up our game. We need to get more technology in, need to get more equipment, and start preparing the Ukrainians for the war out in the east, which is going to be a heavy maneuver war.
Well, as the bulk of Russia's aggression seems to be moving in that direction to the Donbas and the Donetsk regions, what are the biggest logistical challenges that the Ukrainian forces face?
Well, I mean, they've got obviously the interior lines, which is a great advantage, but it's 300 miles from Kyiv. So they've got a lot of captured equipment. They got a lot of stuff they got to move down there. Now, one of the things they have advantage of, they have a rail system, which we've seen has been very, very effective, but they also have river barges. There's the Dnieper River that runs all the way down to Dnipro from 300 miles. That's a great way to effectively move a lot of logistics, a lot of heavy equipment, because they're going to need artillery. They're going to need helicopters. They're going to need tanks. They're going to need S-300s and those kinds of things. The logistics challenges are going to be huge, but they got to move now because they got probably about a month until this really gets going big time, until the Russians can sufficiently recover and regenerate and reorganize. They got a month to push as much as they can far forward and take the fight to the Russians.
Wow. General Steve Anderson, thanks. Our coverage of the war in Europe continues later this hour. Today, more accusations of war crimes committed by Russia and Vladimir Putin. As calls grow for Putin to be charged, we examine the process, including the case of the last war criminal brought to justice, the butcher of Bosnia. And next, a partial verdict in the trial of four men accused of plotting to kidnap the governor of Michigan. The next moves prosecutors could make. Plus, an international weapons and drug bust in New York City. The charges that include surface-to-air missiles, a member of a Japanese crime syndicate, and mountains of drugs. But first, a celebration at the White House today after the historic Senate confirmation of Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson to the Supreme Court.
It has taken 232 years and 115 prior appointments for a black woman to be selected to serve on the Supreme Court of the United States. But we've made it. So as I take on this new role, I strongly believe that this is a moment in which all Americans can take great pride. We have come a long way toward perfecting our union. In my family, it took just one generation to go from segregation to the Supreme Court of the United States.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
A jury in Michigan did not convict any of the four suspects on trial in an alleged plot to kidnap the state's governor. The jury announcing the shocking verdicts after days of deliberations. They say they found the two of the men not guilty on all charges. They were deadlocked on verdicts for the other two, Adam Fox and Barry Croft Jr. Now prosecutors can put those two on trial again. They argued the men scouted the governor's summer home and tested explosives. They say they were angry at the Democratic governor over her COVID policies, but defense attorneys argued they never actually planned to kidnap her. They painted the men as stoners who were all talk. A spokesperson for the governor responded to the decisions today, saying in part, "There must be accountability and consequences for those who commit heinous crimes. Without accountability, extremists will be emboldened." Barbara McQuaid joins me now, law professor at the University of Michigan and NBC News legal analyst and former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan. Barbara, thanks. Could a retrial for those two men look any different?
That's a really interesting question, Kelly, and I think that's the one that prosecutors are going to have to assess for themselves. And it may be that we find out a little more about this verdict. Was it one holdout juror who just didn't like the case and nullified the law? Or did a group of jurors have a problem with this case? But I think it would be very difficult to choose to let this case go, as you just read in that statement from the governor's office. I think we are seeing violent extremism on the rise, particularly anti-government violent extremism. And I think to just let this go would embolden others who might be watching and feel like it's open season on elected officials. So I would like to think that they will try them again, but they'll have to assess their options.
The defense lawyers argued the FBI tried to trick the men into committing crimes. Does this verdict prove them right? And is it a blow to the FBI?
It's definitely a blow. I don't know that it proves that that was the theory. We don't know why the jury decided the way it did. And there could be a lot of reasons. You know, in our country, we are designed our system on the premise that it is better that 10 guilty people go free than that one innocent person be convicted. And so we require a unanimous jury to find guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, a very, very high standard. So there can be any number of reasons they didn't find guilt here.
Sure. There were two other men, by the way, who pleaded guilty in the case. Yep. Now, a judge sentenced one of them to 6 years in prison last year. The other hasn't been sentenced. Does today's decision have any impact on their fates?
I'm not sure. I have actually seen this scenario happen before, and it shouldn't have any impact. They admitted in open court under oath that they did commit this crime. They testified before a jury that they did and that it wasn't the government who manipulated them in any way. And yet somehow the jury didn't find that testimony to be persuasive. But I have seen the case where it seems that it is not in the best interest of justice for those who've come forward and admitted their crimes to be imprisoned when others who are perhaps even more egregious are not. So I imagine that if they decide not to retry the case, they might reconsider the appropriate sentence for the remaining sentence to be sentenced and may even seek resentencing for the one who's already been sentenced.
All right. Barbara McQuaid, thanks. A major bust in New York City. This week, federal prosecutors say undercover DEA agents arrested four weapons and drugs traffickers. They include an alleged leader in the Yakuza. That's the infamous Japanese crime ring. His name, Takeshi Ibasawa. According to federal prosecutors, this image shows him holding a rocket launcher during a meeting with the undercover agents. Federal prosecutors say he planned to sell these surface-to-air missiles to rebel groups in Myanmar. In exchange, the feds say the militant groups would give Ibasawa large quantities of meth and heroin. Federal prosecutors say the weapons were intended to protect the drug shipments. They say Ibasawa and his three co-conspirators planned to sell 2,200 pounds of meth and heroin in New York City. Ibasawa faces several charges, including two counts of narcotics importation conspiracy and one count of conspiracy to possess firearms. His lawyer did not immediately respond to a request for comment. If found guilty, he could face a maximum sentence of life in prison. And police say the man accused of shooting Lady Gaga's dog walker accidentally released from jail. Now they're trying to track him down. This is James Howard Jackson. You can see he has a distinct tattoo on his neck. He's one of three men charged in the shooting and robbery of Gaga's dog walker last February. The LA Sheriff's Office reports that Jackson attended a court hearing on Tuesday. Authorities released him from custody the next day. They're calling it a clerical error. Records show that the charges against Jackson have been dismissed. The charges include attempted murder and second-degree robbery. The Los Angeles DA says the dismissed charges should have been replaced by a superseding grand jury indictment. The Los Angeles Superior Court reports it's conducting an investigation into the error. Another first for space travel, private citizens launched into orbit, this time all the way to the International Space Station. Step one, getting back to the office. Step two, company events. The move some businesses are making to get employees out and about with each other.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
3, 2, 1, 0. Ignition. Stop. Go Falcon. Go Dragon. Godspeed. Axiom 1.
This morning, a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket blasted off from the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. It's carrying the Axe 1 crew to orbit and into the record books. Tomorrow morning, they'll be the first all-private crew to dock at the International Space Station. They're also one of the first space missions to be entirely funded by a private company, not by NASA or the government. On the latest milestone in space, here's CNBC's Morgan Brennan.
Together, a new chapter begins. Godspeed AX-1.
After a picture-perfect launch, the private AX-1 crew will now spend 10 days in low Earth orbit, rendezvousing with astronauts on board the ISS Saturday morning. The team, Commander Michael Lopez Alegria, a former NASA astronaut turned Axiom executive, mission specialists Eitan Stiba and Mark Pathy, and pilot Larry Connor.
We're going to be conducting some 25 different experiments, encompassing almost 100 hours of work during our 8-day stay.
The mission is privately funded and managed by startup Axiom Space, which contracted with SpaceX for the flight and is working in partnership with NASA. The agency sees today's flight as a milestone in its plan to encourage private companies to conduct space flights and research. Private crew missions are just the start for Axiom, which is developing modules that will attach to the space station and eventually separate into a free-floating commercial habitat.
We're not a space tourism company. We really are a space station company. And while tourism is one of the things that can occur, it's not the main driver for us. We really are about, we're really pioneering low Earth orbit.
With the exception of Commander Lopez Alegria, the crew paid their own way. A reported $55 million per seat, though Connor has said that number isn't correct, for him at least. But they have spent hundreds of hours preparing, and the coming days will be busy, with work focused on everything from assembling technology for future space habitats to cancer research and other health experiments. AX-1 is the first of four planned Axiom space flights that will, as the U.S. looks to eventually retire the ISS, help inform commercial space station development. Kelly?
A whole new chapter, Morgan, thanks. Chicago police looking to hire, but the number of applications is low, so they're dropping a major requirement to get people in the door. The Academy hands down its decision to Will Smith. We talked to a man who was in the room at the Oscars when the whole thing went down. As more workers return to their offices, many companies are once again encouraging employees to attend in-person events. According to a new survey from the U.S. Travel Association, more than 80% of business travelers say they expect to take at least one trip to a conference, convention, or trade show in the next 6 months. Some business leaders tell CNBC they're also turning to corporate retreats as a way to get workers reconnected. Here's CNBC's Seema Modi.
Workouts on the beach, interactive culinary events, followed by team-building exercises.
Now open your eyes.
A glimpse into marketing firm Captivate's three-day retreat for 125 employees in Mexico.
Over the past 2 years, we've grown, you know, by over 300%. Employees have tripled as well. And we really needed a time to bring everyone together, have people connect, build, you know, team building.
Founder and CEO Krishna Subramaniam says after working virtually for nearly 2 years, employees are yearning to reunite and reconnect. Companies are leaning on in-person retreats to boost morale. That's helping the world's largest hotel operator, Marriott, with bookings for events continuing to increase week over week.
Every large meeting actually starts with a small meeting, people getting together to reconnect, to talk about the business, do some planning, and really strategize.
Social activities are the focus. Tennis and golf tournaments, spa time, even riverboats. Hornblower's City Cruises says its corporate business in California has seen a significant increase in bookings as the state reopens.
We're seeing a lot of demand for California, specifically as the COVID restrictions are starting to roll back.
While many workers say they're ready to attend in-person events again, not everybody's on board. Female activist and author Reshma Sajani says these events will further isolate work-from-home moms who can't afford to attend.
I hear about so many women who, again, have so much anxiety about returning to the office, much less, you know, getting on a plane and going to a three-day conference in San Francisco when they don't have childcare.
While the latest jobs report shows more women are slowly returning to the workforce, we're still far off pre-pandemic levels. Reshma recommends CEOs use surveys as a way to gauge employee interest in these events and also consider providing childcare on site. Kelly?
The times are a-changing. Seema, thanks. The mouse makes a big move as the streaming wars heat up. That's what's topping CNBC's On the Money. Dancing with the Stars moving exclusively to streaming. After 16 years on ABC, the popular show will move to Disney Plus this fall, according to the company. The move gives Disney's streaming service its first live series. Disney taking a major step to boost its content library as it battles Netflix and others for streaming subscribers. And don't call out sick and get a $1,000 bonus. That's JetBlue's offer to their full-time flight attendants, according to a company message seen by CNBC. JetBlue dangling the extra cash through the end of May as post-pandemic travel surges. And Twitter testing a way to let users quietly leave those unwanted conversations. They're calling the new tool unmentioning. For now, the feature is limited to a small number of web users. No word yet on when it's coming to mobile. It's Twitter's second major feature announcement this week. It earlier confirmed it's working on an edit button. On Wall Street today, the Dow up 138 points, the S&P down 12, though, and the Nasdaq down 186. Fed fears weighing on tech stocks the most. The Nasdaq down nearly 4% this week. I'm Kelly Evans in for Shepard Smith. It's half past the hour. Here's what's making the news.
Attacks in Ukraine labeled war crimes. But will anyone be brought to justice? Tonight, the lessons from one of the last trials at The Hague. Two men posing as fake federal agents appear in court as prosecutors detailed the equipment and information they were allegedly stockpiling. But first, the Academy takes action against Will Smith.
Banned from the Oscars for 10 years. That's the punishment for Will Smith after he slapped Chris Rock during the awards ceremony nearly 2 weeks ago. The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences announced the decision after a meeting today. In a statement, Academy leaders say Smith will not be able to attend any events, including the Oscars, for the next 10 years. The statement also apologized for how the Academy handled the situation. It said it fell short and was unprepared for the unprecedented. Will Smith resigned from the Academy just last week. Industry officials say Smith can still be nominated and win future awards. He just can't accept them for the next 10 years. So what did Will Smith have to say in response? Quote, I accept and respect the Academy's decision. That's it. Matt Belloni is with us now. He's writer and founding partner at Puck News. Belloni, I'm sorry. He was in the room at the Oscars when this all went down. Matt, it's good to see you again. What sort of punishment is this?
It's not very much because, honestly, Will Smith doesn't typically go to the Oscars anyway. So banning him from attending for 10 years doesn't really take that much away from him. The bigger punishment would have been to say that you cannot be nominated or win for 10 years. And the Academy did not go that far.
they didn't go that far. Some said they should take away his Oscar. Why do you think they restrained themselves?
You know, taking away someone's physical Oscar is a big step because people like Harvey Weinstein, Roman Polanski, they have Oscars and their Oscars were not rescinded. So doing this would have kind of gone over that threshold. I'm not surprised they didn't do that, but I would have thought that they would have stepped in and said, you know what, you're not going to be able to be honored by this organization for 10 years.
Does that mean this will continue to haunt them or have they put the matter to rest?
Well, judging by the industry reaction that I've heard today, people are buzzing about this and saying that they needed to go further. So I don't think this puts this to bed. We'll see how Will Smith handles this, whether he goes away, whether he does some sort of image rehab over the next few months. But there's a movie later this year that's coming out called Emancipation that he could get nominated for.
And do you think it will keep other studios and platforms from working with him after that point?
You know, we'll see what happens. I think right now he's pretty radioactive. I don't see people wanting to make movies with him. But, you know, time heals a lot of wounds. And if he says the right things, does the right things, he might be welcome back even after that behavior.
Matt Bellany of Puck. Matt, thanks. Two men who prosecutors say pretended to be federal agents in court today for the first time since their arrest. They're both facing a charge of falsely impersonating a federal officer. Prosecutors argued today that the two men should be locked up until they face trial. They say the men are a flight risk and a danger to the community. According to court documents, the men pretended to work for the Department of Homeland Security for years. They even convinced actual federal agents they were the real deal. The court appearance comes as we learn more details about the guns, ammo, and security systems they were stockpiling. CNBC's Shamari Stone now with more on what we're learning about the suspects.
New photos show FBI agents arresting 40-year-old Arian Taherzadeh and 36-year-old Haider Ali in Southeast D.C. Wednesday. They're accused of posing as federal law enforcement agents for over 2 years. This evening in a court hearing, prosecutors argued the two men are a danger to the community. Newly released court documents showing photos of evidence that federal agents say they seized during a search warrant at the suspect's penthouse in this luxury apartment building. Firearms, ammunition, handcuffs, tactical gear, clothes with police insignias, a fingerprint kit, equipment to break through a door, dozens of hard drives, laptops, and passports that show travel to Pakistan and Iran. And prosecutors say Ali told witnesses he was affiliated with the Inner Services Intelligence Agency in Pakistan and say the men were trying to integrate themselves with U.S. federal agents and the U.S. defense community. Surveillance images show one of the suspects at target practice.
It's extremely serious, extremely dangerous.
We interviewed Charles Stevenson, a former police and FBI agent who is now the president of a private investigation company. He says this case raises serious safety and security questions. Federal prosecutors say the suspects had been offering free apartments and gifts to U.S. Secret Service agents, including one who is on First Lady Dr. Jill Biden's security detail.
Did they knowingly take them as gratuities? Was there some favor they did for them? Did they release information to proprietary information? Did they, in fact, release information about their details?
It's pretty scary. We're trying to understand exactly what's going on.
Mohammed Zahid lives in the same building as the suspects. According to court documents, Ali obtained electronic access codes and a list of all the tenants. Today, we learned some of those tenants include U.S. government employees.
Me and my wife were both kind of taken aback because we didn't know what to expect.
Prosecutors say they don't know the purpose of this alleged scheme. Now, the suspects are expected to appear in court again on Monday around 3:30 p.m. Live in D.C.'s Navy Yard community, I'm Shamari Stone. Back to you, Kelly.
Shamari, thanks. Police departments across the country struggling to hire enough officers to fill staffing shortages. And it comes at a time when crime is spiking in some major cities. In Chicago, car thefts are up 43% from a year ago, according to police department data. Theft in general has spiked nearly 70%. The superintendent there recently announced the department would drop a major requirement for some applicants. CNBC's Perry Russum now on what Chicago and other police departments are doing to recruit more officers.
We've got work to do.
Chicago police are facing a shortage of 1,100 positions, nearly 9%
of the entire force.
We've got plans in place to catch up.
Chicago Police Superintendent David Brown is blaming the vacancies on not having a police test for 18 months because of the pandemic.
Police officer Irene Guzman.
To become a cop in Chicago, you have to have 60 hours of college credits. That was waived for military members, and now it's being waived for others, including those who work in healthcare, social services, and trades, all to bring in more people. Brown says that caused a spike in applications, with 3,000 people applying since the beginning of the year. Departments across the country are getting aggressive with advertising.
Chief wants us to make a video announcing that we're hiring.
All right, well, what's up with the turntables?
This is Miami. Let's do it Miami style.
There's a strong push in Florida.
Come join the Hollywood Police Department.
You know, we've got openings in Florida.
Governor Ron DeSantis has been open with his desire to bring in more officers.
And that may mean that you leave Seattle or Chicago.
Anyone new to law enforcement in Florida can now get a $5,000 bonus.
People are saying that Governor DeSantis is handing out checks.
In Joplin, Missouri, the police chief says their recruitment incentive passed in May did not go far enough. On Monday, the city council doubled it.
From $5,000 to $10,000 for a lateral officer transferring to Joplin.
And in Philadelphia,
the candidate pool in the city is very slim.
You no longer have to live in the city to become an officer. The mayor changing that rule yesterday.
It's basically like saying you can only play for the Phillies if you grew up in Philadelphia.
Here in Chicago, the superintendent says this is not the sky is falling situation, but you do have departments that are essentially bidding against each other. And one of the arguments is, why stand in the rain on a Friday night in Chicago when you can be in nice, warm Miami? Kelly.
Good point, Perry. Thanks. And it's official. No more no-knock warrants in Minneapolis. That new rule kicking in today, according to a special order from Mayor Jacob Frey. This comes just days after no charges were filed against the officer who shot and killed 22-year-old Amir Locke during a no-knock raid in February. Under the new policy, officers must now knock and announce themselves for 20 seconds before entering to execute a search warrant. For warrants conducted at night between 8 p.m. and 7 a.m., according to the policy, officers must knock for 30 seconds before entering. Nighttime searches must also be approved by the Deputy Chief of Investigations or someone above that rank. A few exceptions to the no-knock rule allowed, only under exigent circumstances. They include when police are in hot pursuit or when trying to prevent the escape of a suspect. Hurricane season right around the corner, and the forecast is out. The warning from experts about what's coming and how bad it could be. And calls to prosecute Putin for war crimes. But what are the chances it could actually happen? Next, we talk to a man who documented the hunt for one of the most notorious war criminals. An evil, deliberate attack. That's how Ukraine's president described Russia's deadly assault on Ukrainians at a train station. The missile strike now amplifying calls to capture and prosecute those responsible for war crimes. If history is any guide, that will be extremely difficult, if not unlikely. But tonight there's a development that could strengthen any future case. CNBC has learned that the prosecutor who successfully convicted one of the world's most notorious war criminals has been called upon to help Ukraine investigate Russia's war crimes. Dermot Groom flew to Poland this week. Here he is at The Hague back in 2012, leading the case against Ratko Mladic, the Bosnian Serb war commander known as the Butcher of Serbia. In July 1995, Mladic ordered the execution of 8,000 Muslim men and boys. The massacre of Srebrenica, the slaughter carried out over the course of 5 days, the worst European atrocity since World War II. For his role, Mladic was convicted of genocide and crimes against humanity in 2017. The trial alone took 5 years, 600 witnesses. Mladic losing his appeal just last year. That was his last appeal. He's serving life in prison. But all of that was only after he was caught. Finding him in the first place was a whole different story, one that took 14 years. It ended finally at this village in northern Serbia in 2011. Mladic found at his cousin's farmhouse thanks to a tip. He reportedly had asked his cousin to shoot him before letting him get caught. But when officers arrived that day, his cousin wasn't home and Mladic was arrested. Journalist Julian Borger chronicled the hunt in the book The Butcher's Trail, how the search for Balkan war criminals became the world's most successful manhunt. Julian, live with us tonight. He's also the world affairs editor for The Guardian. Julian, thanks. We wanted to get your perspective on how hard it could be to capture Russian commanders, Putin himself, potentially. How did Mladic evade capture for so long?
Mladic evaded capture for so long after the president of Serbia, who was really his protector, Slobodan Milosevic, fell from power. I mean, Milosevic fell from power in 2000, and yet Mladic was able to hide out for another 11 years. And that was because the Serbian deep state, you could call it, the military and the intelligence were protecting him. And deep state lived on after Slobodan Milosevic left. So he was surrounded by concentric rings of protectors, and it took really sort of deep change in the leadership of, in particular, Serbian intelligence for there to be a real breakthrough.
Yeah, you can draw what parallels you will to Russia right now, but the former head of Serbia, President Milosevic, was also prosecuted. He died during his trial. What parallels could there be between him and this situation?
Yeah, what it shows is you're unlikely to get defendants before war crimes tribunals unless there is a change of regime in their country. And these people are dictators. And what happened with Milosevic was there was an uprising in 2000. He was overthrown and put in jail in Serbia. And then the new leaders of Serbia decided, because they wanted to get closer to Europe, they wanted to sort of go west. Politically, they handed him over to the Hague Tribunal. It's very hard to imagine that happening in Russia, even if there was a regime change, because any new Russian government is unlikely to hand over a Russian citizen to the International Criminal Court, say. It would be a kind of loss of sovereignty and an admission that the country, this great power, Russia, was unable to try its own citizens. So it's a really long shot to imagine Putin or any of his immediate circle in The Hague standing trial like Ratko Mladic did.
So even as difficult as those were to prosecute, this one you think would be much harder. Is there anything else that distinguishes it from those previous examples or could make it more applicable? We look at the international community rallying around social media images. Obviously, we didn't have that 20 years ago. Anything else that would change the potential course of events here?
Yeah, you're right to point that out. The range of evidence is far wider and deeper now than it was because of social media, because you have these forensic analysts looking at electronic data, satellite imaging that can tell you a lot about the groups that are responsible for these war crimes. So in terms of evidence, there's a whole lot more than there was in the time of the Hague Tribunal for former Yugoslavia. But in terms of the likelihood of getting these people in front of an international criminal tribunal, that is a much longer shot, because the Hague Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia and for Rwanda had quite remarkable powers, because they were set up in a time in the 90s when Russia was prepared to go along to a certain extent, with the US in setting up these tribunals. It was a rare period, very short period of agreement. And as a result, these tribunals had quite significant powers. The International Criminal Court, on the other hand, is really a kind of orphan. The US, Russia, China are not signatories. And so its powers are much less.
Author Julian Borger, thank you so much tonight. Place your bets. New York City, one step closer to getting its first casino. The options on the table and why some aren't interested in playing. Feel like everyone around you is losing it, throwing tantrums, acting out? It's not you. It's a rising trend, and one reporter tried to find out why. What she discovered coming up. Hurricane season on its way, and researchers predict this year will be a nasty one. Hurricane experts at Colorado State University forecasting an above average hurricane season this year. They're predicting 19 named storms. That's five more than the average season. Nine of those are expected to become hurricanes, and at least four expected to be major hurricanes. Researchers say that means Category 3 or higher, with sustained winds of at least 111 miles per hour. The researchers cite a warmer than normal subtropical Atlantic Ocean and the likely absence of El Nino conditions. Those conditions typically make the season less active. Last year was the third most active hurricane season on record. That's according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Hurricane Ida battered the Louisiana coastline last August, flooding homes. Authorities say the storm killed more than 90 people across the U.S. Hurricane season runs from the 1st of June to the end of November. Slots in the middle of Times Square, blackjack with an East River view, or maybe a Monaco-style casino right on top of Saks Fifth Avenue. That could all be a reality now that New York State has reached a budget deal. The $220 billion spending plan clears the way for the Big Apple's first big casino. CNBC's Contessa Brewer is in Manhattan for us. Contessa?
Hi there, Kelly. Yeah, New York is already, of course, the financial heart of the country. The shopping, the restaurants, Broadway make it an international tourism destination. But what we don't have are casinos.
Where bright lights of the big city are concerned, Times Square gives Las Vegas a run for its money. Now, New York is ready to roll the dice on casinos.
We're looking at all the proposals. We want the best for New York City. We want the economic development. Whatever happens in New York City, we think this is the best place.
Three new licenses will be awarded for casinos in the southern part of New York, known as Downstate. A study last year concluded they could generate as much as $4.4 billion in gaming revenue alone. Some elected leaders see that as a potential jackpot for their districts.
Each license, and there's three. Each license carries with them about 1,000 construction jobs and then about 1,000 post-construction jobs.
Three big casino companies are considered front runners to win a license, though not a sure bet. Sands spent years lobbying New York lawmakers to build an integrated casino resort here. It just sold its Las Vegas casinos, so it has lots of cash on hand for a new investment. MGM Resorts operates a racetrack with slots and electronic table games in Yonkers, north of New York City. Resorts World has a similar facility in Queens, near JFK Airport.
We feel like we have a wonderful place, but it's not yet anywhere near its full potential.
I do not welcome the idea of casinos in New York City, and particularly in Manhattan.
Some leaders worry about casinos attracting undesirable elements.
We have worked very hard over the last several decades to upgrade Times Square from the pretty sleazy place it used to be.
But Bally's chairman says those details can all be worked out. Licensing casinos is just a logical next step.
Gaming in New York State, we have the lotto, we have the horse racing, we have some online sports betting. We're in the gaming business.
The competition for these casino licenses will be fierce and expensive, with the license fee at a minimum of $500 million and the tax rate still to be determined. The money, Kelly, will be used to fund education and responsible gaming initiatives.
$500 million. Wow. Contessa, thank you. An unruly airline passenger just got hit with the biggest fine ever issued by the Federal Aviation Administration. More than $80,000. Officials say the passenger bit, headbutted, and spit at crew members and passengers. The incident happened last year, but it's part of a broader, troubling trend of bad behavior and violence. A reporter for The Atlantic writes, people aren't just acting out on planes. They're also throwing tantrums at hospitals and school board meetings, even on the ski slopes. So what's happening? Olga Khazan joins us now. She's the reporter behind that piece in The Atlantic. Olga, welcome. You spoke with a lot of experts about the string of bad behavior. What did they tell you?
Yeah, so there's a number of things going on. I mean, one of them is just that people are so stressed out. The pandemic has kind of created a lot of situations that experts call high stress, low reward. So we all know about these, you know, situations where you try to go out to dinner with your friends, but one person wants to eat outside, but it's raining, you know, and then even more than that, you know, just the closures of daycares and schools and things like that have just made people really stressed out. And that is, research shows, the number one reason why people lash out in these kind of rude and uncivil ways.
Does it mean the pandemic ending or maybe the mask mandate going away on planes could be the end of the story here?
Yeah, possibly. But some of these things are social norms that kind of get set in place and then they're really hard to untangle. So sociologists think that all of this isolation that we've experienced over the past 2 years has kind of shifted the way people behave. People have started to think more about kind of their own needs and their own priorities instead of what matters to society as a whole. And so that might take a little while to resolve.
Any simple solutions?
I do think the mask mandates going away might make things a little bit better, but I mean, we might be looking at another surge too coming down here. So I think it's just going to take some time and people, unfortunately, you know, trying to be patient and do their mindfulness meditation and take their deep breaths.
But you worry the genie's maybe out of the bottle.
I do. Yeah, at least for a little bit.
Olga, thanks very much. We appreciate it. Olga Hazan on the rise in unruly behavior on airplanes and even, like she said, on some ski slopes. 45 seconds left in a race to the finish tonight. At least 52 people, including children, are now confirmed dead after a Russian missile strike on a crowded train station in eastern Ukraine. That's the latest death toll from Ukrainian officials. Slovakia is sending a Soviet-era S-300 air defense system to the Ukrainians to help them shoot down missiles and advanced aircraft. In the meantime, the United States is deploying a Patriot missile defense system in Slovakia. And the Academy has banned Will Smith from attending the Oscars and all other Academy events for 10 years. The actor says he accepts the punishment for slapping Chris Rock on stage. And now you know the news of this Friday, April 8th, 2022. I'm Kelly Evans in for Shepard Smith tonight. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at The News on CNBC and listen to The News podcast on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast platform.
You've been listening to the CNBC podcast, The News with Shepard Smith. You can always catch us live weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern. Only on CNBC.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.